I already had an IQ test this year. I don't think I've ever had
one. Reaction time is a factor in this, so please pay attention. Now answer as quickly as you can.
Okay.
1187 at Unterwasser.
That's the hotel.
What?
Where I lived.
Nice place?
Yeah, sure, I guess. Is that part of the test?
No. Just warming you up, that's all.
Huh. It's not fancy or anything.
You're in a desert, walking along in the sand when all of a sudden...
Is this the test now?
Yes. You're in a desert, walking along in the sand when all of a sudden you look...
What one?
What?
What desert?
Doesn't make any difference. What desert is completely hypothetical.
But how come I'd be there?
Maybe you're fed up. Maybe you want to be by yourself. Who knows? You look down, you see a tortoise, Leon. It's crawling towards you.
Tortoise? What's that?
You know what a turtle is?
Of course.
Same thing.
Never seen a turtle. But I understand what you mean.
You reach down, you flip the tortoise over on its back, Leon.
Do you make up these questions, Mr. Holden? Or do they write them down for you?
The tortoise lays on its back, its belly baking in the hot sun, beating its legs, trying to turn itself over, but it can't. Not without your help. But you're not helping.
What do you mean I'm not helping?
I mean you're not helping. Why is that, Leon? They're just questions, Leon. In answer to your query, they're written down for me. It's a test designed to provoke an emotional response. Shall we continue?
I mean, the law of the country.
American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with the capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy, and I report to you from the internet for Wednesday, October 5th, 2005. And this would be Newsreel, the WOG Global Sit Rep for Global Core Political Tyranny, Technology, and Trends for your headspace and timing, just to make sure that you can stay on top of exactly what is going on in this crazy world we live in. RAND Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening to this program, you are as well. You can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal, and you can get to my live journal by going to Sean_Kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free radio broadcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, OspreyRadio.info, and Extreme Radio Tampa, as well as SRN1. And you yourself, don't forget, are free to distribute this broadcast any way that you see fit. Right then, let's never mind any feedback. Didn't get anything too much of merit, but we do have just an absolute boat and load of news. And right off the top, let's get into the news with some stuff sent in by Desert Runner down in Australia. Some Aussie terror news. Now, Australia is really going out there with this terrorism thing. They're like, oh yeah. Yeah, we're terrified of terrorists over here in Australia. Yeah, never had a terrorist attack, but oh baby, are we locking this situation down over here? Australia's new anti-terrorism laws could lead to suspects being tortured, a human rights organization said yesterday. Now, tortured is kind of a funny thing there. Well, actually, torture isn't very funny, unless, of course, you know, you're kind of a sadist. But anyway, Prime Minister John Howard and the state and territory leaders have signed off on new laws that allow the detention of terrorist suspects. Now, bear in mind that terrorism is a pretty vague term, for up to 14 days without charge. So we can grab you, pick you up, throw you in the slammer for 14 days without a charge under the general sort of auspices of terrorism. Speaking at the Rights Australia's annual meeting in Hobart, spokesman Greg Barnes said yesterday that the laws could lead to cases of torture. Well, and then, of course, you have to define what torture is. This is by no means a far-fetched claim, he said. Legal opinions provided by the Bush U.S. administration have justified the use of torture on terrorism suspects on the basis that interrogators are entitled to use torture because the terrorist suspect in question is aiding and abetting a terrorist plot. Now, the problem with this logic here is that the term suspect is used. A terrorist suspect in question is aiding and abetting a terrorist plot. Now, it's also the application of... I don't think you should use torture on terrorist suspects. You should use torture, perhaps, on terrorists. Like, if the guy, you know for a fact, was picked up, you know he was at the scene, you know he was had a bomb strapped to his chest, then it's just a matter of getting him to talk, then yeah, I would say, okay, you might want to look at some different types of torture. Now, torture shouldn't be just bamboo under the fingernails. We've got more than enough, you know, pharmaceutical stuff going on here where they'd just be able to inject people and say, okay, now, you know, there's your sodium pentothal, and they'll tell us everything you know, la, la, la. You know, hell, you could probably make it a good time for the guy. Have him think that he's talking to God. You know, they got these helmets they can make where they can simulate a religious experience. You know, all these terrorists believe that they're working for the great holy Allah jihadi kind of thing going on anyway. So why don't you stuff his head full of acid, strap one of these helmets on him, and talk to him as though he's speaking to God, and he'll tell you everything he knows. You know what I mean? Like, that's a lot better than, say, tying him to a, you know, a bed rack and throwing voltage through it. That's just me. The administration's lawyers have taken the view that even though the U.S., like Australia, has signed the Convention Against Torture, the use of torture on a terrorism suspect is justified because hurting that person may be the only way, maybe the only way of preventing a terrorist attack. I have issue with this. I do think that you should be able to, you know, get information through pharmaceutical interrogation techniques, because torture, understand that torture for torture's sake is just sadism. Okay, torture to get information is a form of interrogation. It's extreme physical interrogation. So it's also, I would argue, obsolete, because you don't really know if the information you're getting is solid, because the guy will say whatever he has to say in order to make the pain stop, right? So, you know, I'm a bigger fan of, you know, pharmaceutical interrogation than I am of, you know, the whole bamboo under the fingernails things. As we know now, the U.S. military and security forces have been abused. Oh, pardon me, have abused that advice by inflicting torture of hundreds of captives at Guantanamo Bay and Abu Ghraib prison. Well, okay, you know, there's torture, and then there's torture, and then there's just making people uncomfortable, but we'll get back to that. Writes Australia Director Howard Glenn said Australia had form when it came to inhumane treatment of people in detention. And they had form. The appalling physical and psychological treatment of asylum seekers in our detention centers is now well documented, he said. Well, you know, Australia's not so big on the refugees. What guarantee do Australians have against mistreatment of terrorist suspects? What guarantee do Australians have against mistreatment of terrorist suspects held without charge? So they could pick somebody up, you know. Now, there's another couple ways that this law could be abused. Okay, of course, it's like, okay, well, you know what, this Sean Kennedy guy here, you know, he's causing problems. You know, he's got this newsreel show. He's reporting. There's a lot of people listening to this show. You know, he's growing. You know, podcasting needs more content. More people are downloading newsreel. You know, they're putting it on their pods, telling other people about it for podcasts. That's a problem. You know, he's becoming a pain in the ass for our overlord alien masters. So what we're going to do is we're going to pick Sean up, charge him as a terrorist suspect, because we don't know. Okay. And then what we're going to do is we're going to beat the living fuck out of Sean for 14 days. You know, that's what we're going to do. We're just going to smack the shit right out of this guy. And if he can hold out with his story and not, you know, completely, you know, cave, then we'll let him go after 14 days. And after 14 days of shit kicking, you know, generally speaking, he'll get the point that he wants to shut the fuck up and not have any more problems, you see. So that way, you know, we'll get rid of newsreel and everything, and the whole thing's legal under the terrorism clause. You see how that works? Now, that's a totally easy example of how this kind of law could be totally and completely, well, exploited. So this is what we wish to avoid. Yet, at the same time, what you want to avoid is you want to avoid picking up some piece of shit who had a bomb strapped to his chest, and he's like, I'm not talking to anybody until I get my lawyer. Well, no, ass clown, you've got a bomb strapped to your chest. You're going to kill a whole bunch of innocent people. Fuck you, I know my rights. Uh-huh. Well, me and my pair of vice grips over here are going to go to work on you. Now, this is, you know, I would say there are times to do things like that, but usually it's when time is a factor. If you've got a guy for 14 days, you don't need to physically torture him. You should be using medical treatments on him and pharmaceutical techniques in order to extract information. If you got 20 minutes, okay, and you've got to get the information before the bomb goes off, yeah, you're deboning his arm. But until that point, if you've got the time, there's no real need for physical torture. I don't really condone that. I mean, it has its place, but it's largely obsolete, especially with our medical understanding we have today. You know, if you look at it from a purely, you know, clinical standpoint here. Now, in space news, and this was sent in by Rogue Trooper, he's been sending me just an asshat full of just a ton of info. He's been sending me, my God, I got a hockey sock full of stuff here. A space industry leader said Monday that this is in space news, that he's launching a rocket racing league that will enable spectators to watch races between rocket planes, saying the cosmic derbies will be held up, will help open up the space frontier. Now, I gotta know, you know, anybody who's looking for a pilot for one of these rocket planes, sign me the fuck up, because I would do anything to get inside a rocket. That'd be hot. Of course, there's a really good chance I could go rogue and head for the stratosphere, but there you go. This will bring the resources of space to the people of Earth. Well, that's pretty far-fetched. Peter Diamandis, founder of the XPRIZE. Oh, pardon me. Diamandis, I guess is his name. Founder of the XPRIZE, a foundation of space-related prizes, said in the New York City, "Over the last 40 years, I've grown tired of waiting for the government to do it. Goddamn straight. We're all tired of it. We want our flying cars. I want to spark the enterprise space effort the same way it happened in aviation, computers, and the internet," which is, you know, good on you. "The rocket races will use rocket planes known as X-racers, participating in vertical races with high-speed turns. The league will showcase a prototype model known as the Easy Rocket next Sunday in Las Cruces, New Mexico, at the XPRIZE Cup." Well, that's pretty cool. I mean, rocket racing, that's a really cool idea. Dr. Diamandis, who's also the founder of the International Space University in Strasbourg, France. The International Space University? Dude, I'm going to have to go and get me some courses over there. We got to find out, get their website and stuff. Said he considers that rocket races to be a critical commercial step in opening up the space frontier. He intends to make the rocket races into events that the public cannot participate in by holding regional races around the country at local airfields. Cool concept, you know, I mean, it's solid fuel. You could do some funky shit with this. Visitors to the events will be able to examine and feel the planes for themselves, as well as fly simulators. Well, simulators, you know, that's not quite as exciting as strapping yourself in actually a huge hulk of steel. The races will culminate in the semifinals in Reno, Nevada next September, with the finals to be held in Las Cruces in conjunction with the XPRIZE next October. The XPRIZE Foundation is partnering with the Reno Air Races on the endeavor. Now, the Reno Air Races, that's some shit to see. You know, I've never been to the Reno Air Races. Sim, we should look into going to the Reno Air Races, you know, and make a big WOG field trip, see if we can, you know, I don't know, charter a bus or something. Go down there. We'll all get pleasantly snapped. Have a good trip down there, you know. Hit a couple of nice places along the way. Make sure that we all have a good time. It'd be awesome. The league is privately funded by a private equity and private investors. Lots of privacy going on here. With investors kicking in about $1 million each to get into this rocket racing deal. Well, which is not that big of a deal when you're talking about, you know, aviation, because holy crap. Holy crap. Aviation guys are just like, they're that's a cult. Yeah, I mean, you ever look at the private pilot stuff? I mean, these private pilot magazines and stuff like that, and that's an expensive-ass hobby, you know? But myself, I wouldn't mind learning how to get to be a pilot. Anybody out there's got a plane that got kicking around they don't want, throw it my way. You know, I mean, because that's really the limiting factor now, is other than the fact it's fuel, and I don't have a plane. But to get, you know, and to actually get your pilot's license, you got to do ground school, then you got to go up into the air. But, I'd like to get my pilot's license. You know, but I think, honestly, that with the friends I have and the connections I have through the web, you know, and my access to really crazy engineering groups, I think that it'd be really kind of frightening if I actually decided to go, fuck it, I'm building a space fighter, you know, in my backyard. I mean, it's so incredibly zany that it just might work. But anyway, also in space news, we got the European Space Agency called ESA, I like NASA better, ESA's a dumb name, is proposing joining forces with Russia to develop a new vehicle for human spaceflight. It's called the Clipper. You know, I wish somebody somewhere would get their name, you know, the whole name dictionary thing sorted out. You ever notice that these, like, European Space, ESA, like, what kind of a name is that? They should have the name, like, Star Command or something like that. You know, it's sort of these stupid names. And who the hell is naming a six-person spacecraft the Clipper? I mean, that's a stupid name for it. It should be something like, I don't know, the Foxfire 7 or something. I don't know, something a little bit more cooler sounding name. The six-person space plane would give European astronauts autonomous access to the space station and the moon. Autonomous, I suppose. ESA will ask its member states to fund the 30 to 40 million 20 to 27 million pound preparatory study at its next ministerial meeting. So it's 27 million pounds just to do the, so about, what would that be? That'd be about $50 million just for the study. $50 million for a study. And that seems a little bit high to me. If you're just doing a study, what do you need $50 million for the study for? Russia is planning to replace its aging Soyuz capsule with the Clipper and is seeking international partners. I'm sure China would like to get in on this. Soyuz has been in operation since the late 60s, flying cosmonauts back and forth to Salyut, Mir, and the International Space Station. Regarded as the workhorse of the Russia's manned and unmanned space fleet, it's one of the most reliable spacecraft ever built. Yeah, you can't really fuck with the Russians when it comes to reliability. Those people built some solid stuff. Incidentally, it was the Russians who developed this laser technology that we use on our eyes. You know, the whole like LASIK, you know, laser surgery and that on their eyes. That's all Russian tech. But Russia is looking to the future and is planning to replace the Soyuz with a new vehicle that would be capable of taking astronauts into lunar orbit. So orbit around the moon. The objective is to have a vehicle which is more comfortable than the Soyuz capsule, which will be used with pilots and four passengers. So you got four passengers, right? And understand, what is it, 25 mil a piece and you get to go up there? Said Alan Fournier-Sinker, head of the ESA permanent mission in the Russian Federation. He told the BBC News website. It's meant to service the space station and go between Earth and orbit the moon with six crew members. Now, you know, you got to know that going to the moon would be pretty hot. I mean, that would be pretty hot. Personally, I wouldn't mind if I was if I had to die, you know, and we're all, you know, of course, I'm going to be the first guy to sign up to get myself transferred into a, you know, an exoskeleton of some type. But if it was for me, I would love to have my exoskeleton or the robotic body I transfer my consciousness to, since I no longer need to breathe, send my ass to the moon or Mars, you know, something that would be better to explore. Of course, it'd be kind of cool to, I mean, there's an old science fiction plot right there. Anybody wants to write a story? I mean, what if you had a consciousness, go into a robot, go to the moon, and he spends all his time on the dark side of the moon. And then from there, you could take that into a science fiction, into an occult setting. I mean, holy cow, what's cooler than a transferred consciousness wandering around the dark side of the moon? But anyway, the Clipper, this spacecraft, looks like a big bunted bullet, is essentially a people carrier designed to transport astronauts, said Alan Thurkettle, head of ESA's Human Spaceflight Development Department. Now, the Clipper timeline they got on this bad boy here is in 2011, the first Clipper test flight. So we're way the hell out. 2012, first crewed Clipper flight. So they got 11, you know, we're, what are we, 2005. We got 6 years to build it. They got 1 year to test it. And then they want it gone. They want the Soyuz phased out by 2014. Well, okay. I mean, that gives us this wonderful interim next six-year span where we're like, oh, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? What's going to happen? Personally, my call for 2012, everyone's wondering what the hell is going to happen in 2012. That's the big date. Everyone seems to be floating around 2012. If you look at a lot of scientific predictions and stuff like that from the government, it's all kind of floating around 2012. I personally think we're going to come out of the closet with alien contact in 2012. That's my own personal call. Now, in flag-burning news sent in by Matt, 20 members of Congress are calling for the reinstatements of the broadcast flag. Now, we killed this thing, but we need to really make sure it's dead. A controversial form of copy prevention technology for digital TV broadcasts. In a letter Thursday, the politicians called for rapid approval of a federal law adopting the broadcast flag, which would outlaw the over-the-air digital TV receivers and computer Turner cards that don't follow strict anti-copying standards. Ah, so this is yet another money grab. Program producers will naturally be reluctant to license their high-value programs for digital distribution without the protection from widespread acts of infringement over the Internet. Wow, there's a great widespread acts of infringement. It's widespread, this infringement. Good God. You know, there's more important things to worry about here, said the letter sent to Fred Upton from, I guess he's from Michigan, chairman of the House of Representatives panel on Internet and Commerce. And hopefully Fred's going to get his shit together and tell these guys to cram it up his ass. No legislation has advanced in either the House or the Senate, but opponents of the broadcast flag have been warning that the proposal could be attached to spending bills. The bill funding in the Federal Communications Commission through 2006, for instance, is still before conference committee. So we need to make sure that we need to follow this and shoot it down before it gets anywhere. In a 3-0 ruling in May, which we covered, a federal appeals court rejected the FCC's regulations adopting the broadcast flag. But the ruling was a limited one. The judges said that though the FCC lacked the authority to outlaw TV tuners, Congress could choose to enact a law allowing it. So we got to make sure that we talk to our congressman to say, whoa, dude, this is all bad. Since then, the Motion Picture Association of America, the MPAA, has been lobbying Congress to reinstate its The Scheme. They'll be paying off everybody, bribing everybody in sight just to make sure they can get this through. In an essay for CNetNews.com in May, MPAA head Dan G. Lichtman, Jesus, Dan Lichtman, guy, is a great guy, eh? Dan Glickman wrote, "The broadcast flag does not inhibit copying, nor does it prevent redistribution of programming over a personal home network. It only restricts unauthorized redistribution of programming over the internet and other digital networks." So you just contradicted yourself with your own statement there, Pump. Thursday's letter from Representative Charles Pickering from Mississippi and Adolphus Towns. There's a name, Adolphus. Adolphus? That's his name. Adolphus. No shit. Edolphus. Wonder if that's got to be Greek or something. Demonstrates that the MPAA has screwed. Oh, pardon me. The MPAA has screwed broad bipartisans, but they're also, the demonstrates the MPAA has secured broad bipartisan support. It was signed by 12 Republicans and 8 Democrats who were all paid well for their work. Public Knowledge, an advocacy group that has sued to yank down the FCC's broadcast flag, said that an emailed response to the letter, the broadcast flag legislation would give the Federal Communications Commission control over virtually any technology from set-top boxes to computer software. So it's pretty vague stuff. You got to look at this and go, whoa, you know, we want to make sure that we can kill this broadcast flag. And speaking of some dirty tricks floating around, in Black Ice News, sent in again by Rogue Trooper, a patch, now this is for all you PSP guys out there, but a patch claiming to be from Team PSP has been floating around various PSP websites lately. Unfortunately for fans, the homebrew will turn your PSP into a shiny new brick. Now, I will guarantee you that the PSP manufacturers are people releasing this patch because they don't want people using homebrew tech. PSP updates have warned homebrew users the dangers of using this patch. The patch appears to be a purposely malicious piece of homebrew designed to delete important files from the PSP's firmware. This will, without a doubt, brick the PSP, reducing it to an unusually pretty decorative slab. While the makers are unknown, there has been a widespread backlash from homebrew supporters who view it as a deliberate attempt to throw people away from the idea of independent coding. While some have been severely disappointed by the patch reducing their machines to scrap, others have turned vengeful and sent the patch on to still more users. Now, that doesn't really seem... This story seems a little weird. You know, a guy who installs a patch and fucks up his PSP is not going to pass that patch on. That doesn't fit with the culture. That doesn't make sense. While homebrew programmers are bitter about the patch, it has been universally accepted that the PSP has hit a stage where malicious hackers would begin to play with the idea of destroying them for no reason. Well, I suppose there's psychos everywhere, but this whole thing seems a little bit weird to me. It smells funny. Further, unlike a PC, the PSP has no ability to reinstall the firmware. So once it's been destroyed, it stays that way. Well, okay, that's a matter of soldering and doing a little bit more tricks to make it so that you could install firmware, but I digress. While there are groups working on a hardware flash that will allow PSP to be formatted much like a PC's hard drive, there seems to be little hope in the future. Well, if they're working on it, how can you say there's little hope? This is clearly an angled, story. How you see this one is entirely up to yourselves, but the message seems to be, stick to only downloading from trusted websites, do not run programs received by email, and if you're nervous, don't run homebrew. Of course, conspiracy theorists have already proclaimed that Sony wrote the newest patch to frighten homebrew users into upgrading to the 2.01 patch. Of course, why would Sony do that? What's their motive? Oh, wait, there's massive motive. And I'm sure they're in collaboration with the lizard people. Oh, isn't that funny? That's funny. Yeah, Sony's in collaboration with the lizard people. Yeah, that's great. I love articles like this where quite clearly Sony did write this, you know, piece of malicious hardware. I mean, it's a perfectly, you know, it's a dirty tricks team. That's exactly what they're doing. They release this. They don't want people downgrading to their previous hardware, so they release a patch that fucks their PSP. I mean, it's too obvious. Come on now. Is there a motive? Yes, that's fine. So there's a motive for Sony to put it out there. But what's the motive for anybody else to put it out there? Oh, they're malicious. Uh-huh. Right, so a guy is going to write a piece of code that purposely screws up under the huge auspices of getting props because he wants to, you know, be known as the guy bricking everybody's PSP. Something doesn't smell right there. I'm going to go with the concept that Sony's the one responsible for this. Now, here's an interesting piece of Cyberpunk kit. You've probably seen this floating around. The Sonic Grenade. Very cool. Do you find it hard to get your partner or the kids up in the morning? Well, I'll tell you this much. Okay, I'll get through this article and see. There's obviously a lot of applications that you could do with this thing. Well, the Sonic Alarm is the perfect solution for your problem. Getting that grumbling, snuffling bulk out from under the duvet in the morning is a challenge, and you really shouldn't have to bother yourself with. Especially as that thing emerges is inevitably grumpy and looks like a hungover swamp monster. Well, the Sonic Alarm makes the whole getting out of the bed exercise a very simple and indeed amusing operation. Looking like an old-fashioned comedy hand grenade. A comedy hand grenade is what they say. It's not a comedy hand grenade, actually. It's a World War II pineapple grenade. But anyway, the Sonic Alarm will wake up pretty well anything. Simply pull the pin, yell an emphatic fire in the hole, and lob the grenade into the sleeper's room. After 10 seconds, a very annoying and piercingly loud noise with three volume settings will blast out from the alarm. That's not all, however. What makes this especially great is that to stop the alarm, the sleeper has to find you so you can put the pin back in. It's stupid and brilliant, and it will be the bane of every oversleeper on the planet. Parents are going to love this, although the soon-to-be rudely awakened might not. Well, okay, first of all, you lob this into your teenager's room. I think this is very funny. This is to all the parents out there who, you know, might be downloading the show saying, oh, wow, this is funny stuff. I'm going to use this on my kid. Now, that's a really bad idea because your kid will break it right off the top. He will take a hammer and smash this thing into tiny millions of little ditty-bitty pieces. Okay, right off the top. Second of all, you've also set a precedent here where if you're going to start doing electronic warfare on your family members, you can bank that if you're throwing this into your kid's room or if you throw this into your parents' room and your dad happens to be an electrical engineer, do not do this because we're approaching the realm of like homemade tasers attached to doorknobs and things of this nature. Because personally, if I'm sleeping in my room, okay, and my parents throw a sonic grenade into my room, I'm sorry, but I'm hooking up a taser to the doorknob so the next time they try to open the door to huck a sonic grenade in, no, not going to happen. They're going to catch, you know, a few thousand volts in the wrist. Have some of that, their dad. You know, and you know, you can actually get one of those motion alarms. You know, those ones that you can take and you touch the doorknob and it kind of completes the circuit. It's a good idea. But that said, on other websites, they're talking about throwing them into noisy neighbors' houses, things like this. It's kind of an expensive piece of ordnance, but definitely falls into the cyberpunk kit category. And as well, you could probably take something like this and see how loud you could really get it. Maybe there's a hack for it to increase the noise to a point where, say, your ears will bleed. Kind of handy. You can also think of all the wonderful applications you could do with stuff like this for social jamming, like, say, throwing it into the Senate of some company. I mean, not the actual Senate, but, you know, if you wanted to mess with, you know, you could booby trap rooms with it, right? It's a pull pin. Attach it to the wall, hook the pin to the door. Guy opens the door, pulls the pin, closes the door. 10 seconds later, thing goes off. You know, I mean, there's lots of applications for something like this. All you got to look at improvised grenade booby traps and, well, away you go. Lots of fun for the whole family. Of course, my dog would probably destroy it. You know, he'd bite it once and that'd be the end of it. But anyway. Now, into tracking news. You remember the other day I was talking about the GPS spoofing, which is a great hack. And it seems that these folks here are definitely going to be attending the newsreel site my live journal and click on the newsreel link to go download that GPS spoofing because New York City cabbies are opposing plans to install GPS devices or similar technology in their vehicles. Yeah, New York cabbies are not going to put up with this. As the city's Taxi and Limousine Commission boasts a year of technological innovations with plans for hybrid vehicles and GPS or similar technology, thousands of drivers are parking their yellow cabs and protesting. The New York Taxi Workers Alliance is rallying in the city Monday. Drivers say they don't want to be tracked and do not need the expense, estimated from $3,000 to $5,000 per vehicle, of installation. $5,000? Jesus. They also claim the devices could be used to monitor speeding and other activities, violating their rights. Now, there's two ways to look at this. Well, they're employed, right? Their job is to drive around the city and take people places, right? So if you do your job, you got nothing to worry about. But they're violating their rights. Their rights to what? Their rights to not do their job? Their rights to slack? You see what I mean? So it's an interesting thing here. It probably is violating the, now that said, it is violating their rights. I mean, we got to look at what their rights are and check out if on paper this is actually violating their rights. The TLC began requesting proposals last year to meet new cab requirements, including additional GPS systems. The commission maintains that tracking equipment would help drivers navigate traffic, provide efficient routes, and help passengers recover lost property. Well, I'm sorry. A New York cabbie does not need a machine to tell him how to drive his fucking car. Okay, New York cabbies are probably, you know, realistically, the best drivers on the planet. Because I've been in the goddamn city, and anybody who can drive a cab in that city, I'm sorry, you've got to be a ninja. The only people who I put up against, you know, maybe we should have, that should be a sport, you know, they should have cab races. And the only people I'd love to see Egyptian cab drivers up against, say, New York cabbies. You know, who's got the most badass cabbies? You know, they have to run a course and get from one place to another place in a city, you know, an unknown city. So you take, New York cabbies and Egyptian cabbies and then send them to Paris and get through the city or something like that, you know, where they got to work by maps only or something like that. I mean, this is a kind of an interesting sport, don't you think? But as for the recovery of lost property, oh, that's just nonsense. When the commission announced last year that it planned to mandate equipment for mapping and automated data collection, Chairman Matthew W. Doss said the improvements would enhance the fleet's technological capabilities, improving passenger convenience, and bring the already high quality of taxi cab service to the next level. Yes, the next Big Brother level. But unfortunately, I'm here to tell you, the guys inside the cabs are not going to be so cool with this option. And should they be? I mean, you know, it is a double-edged sword. You know, they do have a job. So is it, you know, as a cab driver, would I want this in there? No, absolutely not. No one would be able to tell what I'm doing, and it would make, you know, I'd have to work a lot harder. But, you know, from a management perspective, you can see why they'd want that in there. But it probably does violate their rights. Now, speaking of rights violation, talk about, you know, this is one of the problems here. In database news, now this is something. After receiving hundreds of requests from Americans asking to know what personal information the government has obtained about them, the Transportation Security Administration, the TSA, told passengers that it doesn't have the capability to perform a simple computer-based search to locate individual records. Now, if you can't search for records of individuals, what's the fucking point of the database? The TSA revealed last fall that it would use a private passenger data from all domestic airline flights taken since June of 2004 to test its troubled secure flight passenger screening system. In response to a fruitless Privacy Act request by Alaska residents, the Electronic Frontier Foundation encouraged other airline passengers to request their own files. TSA recently began notifying passengers who filed Freedom of Information Act and Privacy Act requests that it lacks the ability to easily search its records. So it can't easily search its records, or it's difficult to search the records. Can you search the fucking records? And if you can't do it easily, who cares? We need to know. TSA also said that it would close such requests unless individuals provided additional detailed information, such as air carrier they used and dates of travel and their phone numbers, part of the data that requesters were seeking in the first place. So they're going to take the request and use their request in a database, which they claim they can't search. TSA is failing to follow the law, said EFF staff attorney Matt Zimmerman. The Freedom of Information Act and the Privacy Act are very clear obligations on government agencies for searching their records, and TSA is simply said that it doesn't want to go through the effort. It's bad enough that Secure Flight has repeatedly failed to show that it can be a useful tool to strengthen airline security. However, that doesn't excuse the federal government from telling Americans about the private information it has gathered and used to test the project. Well, you know, you look at this. This is yet another massive example of, you know, the left, us out here on the outside going, hey, what's our information? And the people with the power and the guns and everybody going, fuck you, we're not going to give it to you. What are you going to do about it? Well, we're going to get our lawyers. And do what? And do what with your lawyers? What are you going to do with your lawyers? Huh? You're going to send the lawyers up against the government? Right on. You go ahead and do that. We will tie that up in courts for the next 10,000 years. In light of the volume of record requests that it received, TSA recently agreed to stop deleting the passenger data it obtained for testing Secure Flight until it processed its backlog of requests. Stop deleting its passenger data it had obtained. Why would it stop deleting the passenger? TSA told initial requesters that some of their data had already been deleted. Well, I don't think they'll care if you delete the data, because the data is then gone. So why would TSA say to delete data. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Secure Flight, a passenger profile system aimed at identifying security risks, is a successor to the controversial CAPS 2 program that was canceled in a wake of questions about its cost, effectiveness, and impact on privacy and civil liberties. The Secure Flight screening process would involve comparing airline passenger reservation data with an interagency terrorist watch list to determine who should be subject to more invasive screenings or arrest. Well, why are you flying, Mr. Kennedy? You have this newsreel program where you talk about things. I think we're going to arrest you because we think you're a risk. We think you're a risk. After repeatedly misleading Congress and the public about its intentions to use the data provided by commercial data brokers to supplement the watch list, the TSA recently announced that it would not use such data in the program for the time being. Despite the controversy surrounding the project, TSA has stated that it's moving forward in this fall plan for a partial rollout involving two airlines. Well, so again, they're gathering information, and even though the FF is standing up and saying blah, 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 you know, there's not a whole lot that they can do because, well, you know, the government's just going to sit back and go, well, okay, we're going to do this, and we'll tie it up in paperwork. And what's the EFF's option? You know, this is, it's very frustrating to see how, you know, we try to do things peacefully, but the minute you talk about doing things that aren't peaceful, bang, you're a terrorist, and then you're thrown in jail. That's quite a system they got set up here. You got to really marvel at how slick that really is. Now, in child porn news, a witness in computer crime trials has called for the release of individuals convicted of child pornography offenses based entirely on material found on their hard drives. Jason Coombs, who has been involved in computer crime trials since 1994, issued a statement calling on police to be more thorough in their investigations. The experts contended that third-party control of a PC, which is then used to store or view child pornography images, could lead to the conviction of innocent people. It's also really easy to frame somebody. Like, I'm a cop who, without some scruples, I go into buddy's house, search his computer, I got a couple CDs of child porn, download it onto his hard drive, make a folder, and then boom, he's instantly a pedophile. I have seen numerous cases in which the computer forensic evidence proves that a third-party intruder was in control of the suspect's computer. So there's somebody else involved here. Every person convicted of an electronic crime against a child based only on evidence recovered from a hard drive that happened to be in their possession should be immediately released from whatever prison they are now being held. There is simply no way for law enforcement to know the difference between innocent and guilty persons based on hard drive circumstantial evidence. This is pretty edgy stuff here. Coombs added that it was the responsibility of the police to use keylogging and internet wiretaps to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. I would have to concur with that. He also described it as outrageous that someone could be convicted of such a crime based solely on the contents of their hard drive, which is true. I mean, everyone knows that you could, you know, log into some guy you don't like at work, dump a bunch of child porn on his hard drive, and then report him because you're the tech, and boom, his life is not only did he lose his job, but his life is generally fucking destroyed because he's labeled as a pedophile. And even if he's innocent, he's smeared for life. The guy will have to move. Coombs highlighted the case of Commodore David White, who was accused of accessing U.S. child porn website and was relieved of his command despite there being no hard evidence against him. He was found dead in his swimming pool the next day. Investigations into child pornography have led to 4,000 arrests, 1,600 people charged, and 1,200 convictions. Wow. In the UK, there have been 34 suicides by the accused. Professor Neil Barrett, professor of computer science at Cranfield University, and himself an expert witness at computer crime trials. Wow, having a hard time with that. I've heard this argument before, predominantly from defense witnesses seeking to poke holes in a case. To say that everything in a child porn prosecution is to do with the hard drive is unreasonable. We would never bring a case purely on the basis on what's on the computer. Very true. I mean, you know, we'd have to see about that, but, you know, that's what he's saying. Professor Barrett explained that suspects are interviewed and their stories checked before actions are taken. If their computer is clean, for example, if someone else was using their credit card number, no action is taken. He added that the onus is always on the prosecution to prove that the accused directly accessed the images. Very interesting stuff, you know? And there is the concept of, you know, some people would argue up and down whether or not looking at images of child porn, if that's a crime. Well, and now we're getting to the really sticky stuff here. Well, okay, first of all, child pornography, again, is a misnomer. Okay, that is, there's no such thing as child pornography. Sexual exploitation of children is a crime. And images of sexual exploitation of children is, that is the documentation of a crime. It's like a snuff movie, okay? So for you to look at images, to go to jail for looking at images, we're getting in some pretty dicey territory there. And, you know, it's gets pretty hardcore, especially in that kind of a field. Now, in smoker news, now here's some information that, you know, the other day I was talking about how, some of the big tobacco companies are beginning to use subliminal advertising. Well, they're going to start looking after this. So just, you know, watch in the magazines who they're starting to pander to with the information from this study. The greater the number of reported symptoms of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, this is the famous ADHD, shown in childhood, the greater the risk a person is of becoming a regular smoker, according to researchers at Duke University Medical Center. The research team cautions that their findings do not mean that a diagnosis of ADHD as a child leads a person to become a smoker. They emphasize that their study only looked at the self-reported symptoms of ADHD and not clinical diagnosis. However, the findings make it all the more important that children who exhibit a high number of ADHD symptoms receive additional or specialized education about the hazards of smoking, they said. So, you know, I mean, it's interesting. So what they're saying is people who have ADHD have an addictive personality type. And isn't it also funny that ADHD is being medicated? So, you know, since they're already being medicated and they're already addicted to certain medicines, you know, why not? You see how that works? That's kind of interesting. ADHD is a common psychiatric disorder that affects approximately 5% of school-age children and is characterized by difficulty paying attention, hyperactivity, and impulsivity. In order to meet the criteria for having ADHD, a person must exhibit a certain number of symptoms in a multiple settings and be impaired as a result of these symptoms. Now, they say only 5% of school-age children have ADHD, but I wonder how many school-age children are actually on meds, because there is a shitload that are. Their study results appear in the October 2005 issue of the Archives of General Psychiatry. The research was funded by the National Institute of Health and the Department of Psychiatry at Duke University. We wanted to know why people with ADHD smoke more often than those who don't have ADHD, said Scott H. Collins, PhD, Assistant Professor of Psychiatry at Duke and the lead author of a study. It may be something about the symptoms themselves that cause people to smoke, but we aren't certain of that. What our data clearly shows is that for every symptom of ADHD reported in childhood, the stronger the likelihood that a person would smoke regularly during adolescence or early adulthood. This relationship held true even for individuals reporting fewer than the number of symptoms we see in people with a diagnosis of ADHD. So, I betcha that we're going to be seeing more and more first-person computer characters. And in computer games, you're going to be seeing a lot more people smoking. You see what I mean? That's precisely the kind of stuff that is ADHD. A lot of people like to play these video games. Some people say that ADHD and video games are linked. So I bet you dollars to donuts, buddy, that you're going to see more and more people in video games, virtual representations and avatars, smoking. That's my call. We'll see how my little prophecy ring, whether or not that'll come true. Got another piece of cyberpunk kit for you here. A hardened PDA. Very cool piece of kit, okay? A hardened PDA. Juniper Systems, I've never heard of these guys, is introducing a handheld rugged enough to make us almost want to go camping just so we could accidentally fall in a lake or three while editing up some Word files. The Archer Field PC runs Windows Mobile 5.0. and doesn't hold back on its features. With a 520 megahertz Exynos processor, it's got Bluetooth, it's got Wi-Fi, it's got USB host capability, all housed in a shockproof, dustproof, and waterproof casing. Very, very cool piece of tech. Also included are SD and CF card slots that, along with being weatherproof like the rest of the device, support an extended cap to weatherproof expansion cards that are jut out of the device, such as a GPS or camera add-on. This wouldn't hurt if they threw a few more pixels onto the 320x420 3.5-inch display, but at least they're rugged pixels. No word on availability or price, but the website claims it'll have more info up on October 10th. Just in time for my birthday! Hooray! But you can bank that this sucker's not going to be cheap. Any kind of hardened electronics are always very, very expensive. Now, in music news, popular beat combo Harvey Danger is releasing its first album in years free and on BitTorrent. Now, this is kind of cool. The band hopes to make money off the album if people buy the CD, which will be released in the usual manner. The normal CD has a bonus disc, so there is an incentive to buying it. So they release their album, and there's a bonus disc on the CD, so you can go listen to one, you want to hear it, so you go get the other one. This is brilliant, brilliant marketing here. In the statement, the band said it had always felt that illegal file sharing could be a friend to independent musicians, absolutely, and put its money where its mouth was. A spokesman for Harvey Danger said that the free download isn't silly. It was a key part of the band's promotional campaign, ranked alongside radio and press promotion, live shows, and videos. Very smart. The resources of the internet can make possible for a new way for musicians to find their audience and forge a meaningful and artistic career built upon support from cooperative, not adversarial, relationships, the band says. Now, that's bright. That's just smart and, forward-thinking. And that's exactly what more people need to do. This is why, I release my book online for free. Anybody wants to download The Bloodstained Rabbit, you can go download it for free. Or you can buy the book. I think we got less than 40 copies left, but, you can go buy the book. And incidentally, I don't do any of the shipping or any of that stuff, okay? And so please don't send requests for the book to me. All that stuff goes to Sim because, I'm really busy. Now, in gangster news, this is something else. This is a neat little story. I've been sent this about 8 billion times. So credit to all of Server for giving me this information. Justice can sometimes be poetic, but very rarely that is. However, the Recording Industry of America, which has sued 14,800 people for using peer-to-peer networks, is itself being sued. An Oregon woman using an anti-gangster RICO law. Now, this is interesting. Anti-gangster RICO laws to counter-sue the organization which spends its time suing individual file sharers. She denies ever having downloaded or distributed music and accuses the organization of trespass by secretly snooping into her computer, which clearly, they must have in order to get this information. According to the documents filed with the Oregon court, Tanya Anderson, a 42-year-old single mother, was accused of downloading gangster rap at 4:24 a.m. using the name Goten Kitto. Goten Kitto. That just rolls off the tongue, eh? The document notes, Miss Anderson does not like gangster rap music. She does not recognize the name Goten Kitto and was not awake at 4:24 a.m. and has never downloaded music. So fuck off. Mrs. Anderson was told that she could settle with the RIAA or face expensive legal action. Count 8 of the document accuses RIAA of the breach of the racketeer-influenced and corrupt organization's RICO laws. This is some interesting stuff. The document says the record companies directed its agents to unlawfully break into private computers and engage in extreme acts of unlawful coercion, extortion, fraud, and other criminal conduct. Heavy stuff here. The record companies and their agents stood to financially benefit from these deceptive and unlawful acts. Absolutely, this should be open and shut, but you can bet they're probably going to choke her out with all sorts of legal costs. Not so good. And the crowning story of not so good today is Iran is talking shit, which it better not follow up on, because we really don't need any more info in the desert war. But I got some desert war news for you. Iran, apparently, will use, quote, all means, end quote, to damage U.S. interests if Washington steps up pressure on the Islamic Republic over its disputed nuclear program. A top official was quoted as saying Monday. Now, that's some heavy fucking wording coming out of Iran. The Americans should know that if they put more pressure on our country, Iran will be obliged to use all means to disrupt the situation and endanger its interests. Holy crap. A top nuclear negotiator, Ari Larijani, was quoted as saying in the right-wing CISAT Ruse paper. Good God. The regime will not for a moment hold any doubts over its right to master nuclear technology and will use any and all means to acquire it, added Lamarji in the hardline secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council. So this isn't a kook Okay, he's the secretary of the Supreme National Security Council in Iran. Not so good. He did not elaborate on how Iran could threaten U.S. interests. Washington already accused Iran of backing insurgents in Iraq, hosting al-Qaeda operatives, and undermining Middle East peace efforts. Iran insists its nuclear program is strictly peaceful, but European Union and the United States warn Iran to abandon its work on sensitive nuclear fuel cycle, which can be diverted to military use. Scary, scary, scary. In international atomic, the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, last month adopted a resolution that finds Iran in non-compliance with its nuclear proliferation safeguards, an automatic trigger for taking the matter to the Security Council. But Larry Janney said that despite the harsh resolution, quote, nothing particular has happened, end quote, and added that, quote, the path decided upon will be crowned with success, end quote. He also criticized Iran's previous nuclear negotiations, led by the moderate Hassan Rouhani, for showing weakness, because, you know, moderates are all about the weakness. It was Rouhani's team who agreed to suspension of uranium enrichment work in 2004 and full suspension of related activities the following year. Since the presidential election victory of Mahmoud, in June, the appointment of Larry Janney as its top negotiator, Iran has hardened its position by rejecting proposals that abandon fuel cycle technology in return for incentives and resuming uranium conversion work in defiance of an agreement with Britain, France, and Germany. So Iran's making all kinds of friends. Larry Janney has already threatened to block tough IAEA inspections and resume its enrichments, a move that would be certain to spark a serious crisis. He was also quoted as repeating that the question of leaving the non-proliferation treaty is not there, but if they pressure us and go beyond the treaty regulations, we will undeniably re-examine our commitment to the treaty. Iran asserts making fuel for its reactors is a right enshrined by the nuclear non-proliferation treaty, whereas the U.S., which has lumped Iran into an axis of evil, argues the clerical regime cannot be trusted with such a dual-use technology. And while Larry Janney said Iran was ready to continue negotiations and confidence-building measures, he added that to threaten the use of the Security Council leaves negotiations open to question. Now, this is really bad shit. Because in Islam, using nukes is okay. And that's really a problem for me. I don't really think, I'm afraid of Islamic countries getting the bomb. Okay, because they wouldn't give a flying fuck about nuking countries that aren't Islamic. It's right in their religion. Go check it out. I got some daily hacks for you today. First of all, right off the top, big warning, we got a Peer Guardian fix. I guess Peer Guardian dropped the docs and they lost control of some of their update servers. So if you're running Peer Guardian, make sure you go to this link and follow up to see what was going on there. This was sent to me by Zizix. Thank you very much. And as well, I got a wonderful default password list thanks to Data Maggot. And that's a really good one, too. It's more than just for routers, all kinds of uses on this default password list. And that's all I got for you today. But don't worry, I will be back tomorrow to make sure you get the information you need to stay alive. This would be a free radio broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of 71 donators. That's broken down into 56 continuing subscribers from last month. Thank you very much. Plus 3 new subscribers. The new subscribers are hot. And 12 one-time donations from folks who just wanted to make a difference. And thank you so much. And if you would like to keep this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the Donate tab. Upcoming events, I don't got much for you. But thanks again to everyone and their assistance in gathering data. And if you have access to sensitive information or any other pertinent stories, please email them to newsreel, that's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, @rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the compilation album. That's right, Square Matrix number 2, because we've had 1, 2, and 3 now. Excellent albums. Check them out. I'm going to leave you now with a track by Pop Will Eat Itself called Ich bin dein Ausländer, which is a great track, and check it out. I love it very much. Listen very carefully to the words. So until tomorrow, that's what servers say. End of line.
violence, neither is your silence.
If they come to ethnically cleanse me, will you speak out? Will you defend me? Freedom of expression doesn't make it alright.
Trampled underfoot by the rise of the right.